Hi, this is Jan Miyasaki, the host of the Wednesday 8 o'clock Buzz. Thank you for tuning into WORT. If you like what you're hearing, please consider making a donation at wortfm.org/donate. It's 8:34, and I'm enjoying talking to Norm here in the studio. Norman Stockwell is here, publisher of the Progressive magazine. Wanted to talk with him about the celebration of the 100th anniversary of the La Follette presidential campaign. So the events celebrate a century of third-party independent progressive politics. The presidential election was held on November 4th, 2024. Republican Calvin Coolidge defeated Democrat John W. Davis, but also running as a Progressive Party candidate was Robert M. La Follette, who captured close to one-sixth of the popular vote. The events start tomorrow. There is a art exhibit at the State Historical Society called The Moment in History that reaches forward to today. I think that's the whole theme of all of this is the relevancy, the enduring, the hope, you know, of all of that. So, hey, great to have you here.
Thanks very much, Jan. Yeah, this is, I have to credit the folks up in Minneapolis, particularly Phil Wilkie, who maybe is listening right now, who contacted us at the Progressive more than a year ago and said, actually probably close to 2 years ago now, and said, hey, you folks really ought to do something to commemorate this 100th anniversary of La Follette's run for the presidency. And so we went about putting together this conference, and I think that it's really turned into a very exciting event. The exhibit is an exhibit of artifacts and photographs from the 1924 campaign, from collections that we have at the Progressive, from the Historical Society's archives, and some individuals that have contributed items to this as well. And the panels are going to be Thursday and Friday at the Historical Society, and then there's a performance event at the Arts and Literature Lab on Friday evening. And then there's also an event at the Barrymore Theater that's going to feature speakers. It's going to feature some video, live music, and also a little bit of a performance by Tavia La Follette, who is the great-granddaughter of Bob and Belle La Follette. And so it's really an amazing crew of people that are coming together for this weekend series of events.
And we're going to circle back to that because it's really great. I love the politics and the history. I love the arts and culture pieces. But who was Robert La Follette?
So
Robert M. La Follette.
Yeah, Robert M. La Follette was a progressive politician. He was born in 1855, in the middle of the previous century or previous century now, and became an attorney and then later a governor of Wisconsin, briefly served in the U.S. House of Representatives also, and then the U.S. Senate for many years. And in 1912, he started a campaign for president that didn't get a lot of traction, but then in 1924, he organized this brand new Progressive Party. It was a new party that they had to launch from scratch. And so, you know, imagine how long this presidential election year has taken us so far in 23 and 24, and compare that to the fact that they announced in July of 1924 that La Follette was running on this new Progressive Party ticket. They had to build all the infrastructure of a political campaign. They had to raise the funds. They had to travel the country to raise awareness for an election that was a little more than 3 months away. And so all of that, without social media, without the internet, without all of the television ads that you have in political campaigns, and yet La Follette still ended up getting nearly 5 million votes. It was the highest number of votes that a third-party candidate had ever achieved. And that record remained until 1968, the highest number of votes of, by a third-party candidate.
Now, I want to come back and talk about the world in 1924, what the U.S. was facing in 1924, the economic landscape. But tell us about Belle Case La Follette.
So Belle Case La Follette, first woman to graduate with a law degree from the University of Wisconsin, very, very important activist in the women's suffrage movement, but also anti-slavery and in all of the, basically all of the human rights movements of the early 20th century, Belle La Follette was a player, often behind the scenes. I mean, she was the one that kept the magazine going when he, Bob La Follette started the magazine La Follette's Weekly in January of 1909. But he was also at that time serving in the Senate. He had just been governor. He was, you know, traveling the country. He was busy. And so, you know, Belle was the one that really made that happen. And she was able to run the magazine, raise four children, do all of her own political work, you know, all throughout her life until her death in 1931.
Now, and you, thank you for this. I got a preview of the program brochure. You're inside of it as a, I guess you call it a graphic novel description of Bob La Follette.
Yeah, this is a special, I should say, this is a special brand new work of art that has been done by political cartoonist Mike Konopacki, who many people know from his years here in Madison. Mike doesn't live in town anymore, but he's coming back for the conference. And he designed this four-page graphic history of the 1924 campaign, which makes it's the centerfold of our program book, original work. And it's all centered around Belle. Belle is kind of the voice that takes you through this story. Yes. So that's it's a really nice piece of work.
And it's exactly what I wanted to know about. So in addition to what I know about La Follette. So, you know, about his support for women's rights, and then the support of labor, the support, the work to break up the monopolies, and then the support of W.E.B. Du Bois, A. Philip Randolph, the African Methodist Church. So can you just talk about 1924?
Yeah, I mean, you know, here we have the incumbent president in 1924, Calvin Coolidge, who was very much an establishment figure and represented the interests. We're just coming out of the Teapot Dome scandal at this point. There's been a lot of sort of awareness raised about political corruption. It's also the great era of the muckraking journalists. You know, the first time that people, everyday people, are getting the stories in their newspapers about the corruption that's going on inside the closed, smoke-filled rooms of government, right? And so Bob La Follette was part of a progressive reform movement. In fact, he was very much a leader in the Midwest of progressive reform, and his voice in the Senate was very important. He stood up against the U.S. entry into World War I because he said it was just a rich man's war that was basically going to benefit the corporations, the arms manufacturers, and so on. He fought to break up the various trusts, the railroad trusts and so on, that had so much control. Interestingly, in the magazine, La Follette's Weekly, the first year the magazine was operating, there was also a five-part series looking at the press of that time and analyzing all the different press agencies and newspapers and so on in terms of how they did or didn't serve the interests of everyday people. So the other issues of that time, I think, that are important, obviously labor, you mentioned, you know, Samuel Gompers, the head of the FL at that time, American Federation of Labor, was an advocate for La Follette. And I don't think it's shown in this, but they had a meeting where they discussed, you know, issues where the La Follette campaign was working in concert with the labor movement, supporting the workers' right to organize, supporting a constitutional amendment that would ban child labor, and so on. And that was all going on in the background of this campaign. The women's issues, as you mentioned, there was a very strong Women for La Follette contingent, which was supported by, obviously, Bell. Also, Lulu Smith, who was the wife of Burton K. Wheeler, who was the vice presidential candidate, and also with tributes from people like Helen Keller and Jane Addams supporting La Follette's candidacy. Another piece that was really important that we can't omit is the opposition to the Ku Klux Klan. Mm-hmm. The Ku Klux Klan at that time was growing again in the United States. This is the 1920s. This is the rise of a lot of Klan sympathy. There was, in fact, a Klan march here in Madison, Wisconsin. There was the film Birth of the Nation had been shown in the White House when Wilson was president. And so La Follette took a very, very firm stand against the Klan. And there's in this comic, there's an illustration of a brochure that was put out from the campaign. There's also a column from the New York Times. And it was this kind of this sort of unity of vision of the La Follette campaign, supporting working people, opposing corruption in government, opposing large corporations and their influence on government, and supporting women's rights and the rights of African Americans and so on, that really built the La Follette candidacy around the country. And that was the reason that the campaign was as strong as it was, because people saw this as really a voice of change.
You know, it had been had to have been a lot of work to pull together such a coalition that includes white labor, includes black labor, like the A. Philip Randolph. So he must have been a charismatic guy.
Very much so. I mean, this is, you know, the stories of La Follette's speeches. You know, he's up on the back of a wagon in rural Wisconsin. He's standing on the steps of the Capitol. We've got photographs of this in the exhibit, you know, of his just his dynamic personality. On Labor Day of 1924, he delivered a radio address. It was the first time ever that a political speech had been delivered solely on radio, the brand new medium of radio. And La Follette gave this speech, and then it was broadcast live to workers' picnics all around the country on Labor Day. So that was, you know, one example. And another one was film, actually. La Follette did a campaign announcement on the steps of the Capitol with a brand new technique that was called sound on film. It was one of the first talkies done in 1924, where La Follette stood and talked about, as he says, you know, mere passive citizenship is not enough. Men must be aggressive for what is right if government is to be saved from those who are aggressive for what is wrong.
And you know, had to have not been a fake populist, a true populist that wanted to include everyone to experience the ideals of democracy. People like W.E.B. Du Bois defending him and talking about his record, not just at that time, but a consistent record about opposition to discrimination against anyone, and in particular, blacks. And these are, had to have been very authentic, because these are people that I would say are hard to fool, right?
Right. You know, John Nichols has a piece also in this program book. It's a two-page article that we excerpted from a longer piece he wrote back in 1999. But he talks about some of La Follette's growth and the political things that shaped him. And, you know, he grew up here in Wisconsin. He was very much influenced as a young student at the University of Wisconsin by some of the growing progressive voices of activists and in the new burgeoning progressive movement of the 1870s. And you know, he carried that tradition on throughout his life. La Follette died less than a year after this presidential campaign. He had been suffering from heart ailments and so on. But his legacy lives on in so many things. The New Deal very much involved pieces of legislation that had first come out of La Follette and his colleagues. The we say here in the piece somewhere, I think, that, you know, the same influence carried forward to the opposition to the Vietnam War. Ernest Gruening, who was one of the two people that voted against the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, had been part of La Follette's campaign committee in 1924. So, you know, you see this tradition carrying on throughout more than a half century of American politics following the 1924 campaign and influenced by it, by La Follette and by this movement.
Mike Konopacki's piece is fabulous. John Nichols is also in here. He concludes his piece. I know that more than any other leader in American history, La Follette understood the country's promise. So the question is, who are the successors today? I wanted to talk about, you know, the recent election and the uninstructed option. And then we're going to circle back and talk about the celebration. But, you know, just add that piece, the successors. Yeah. Is there a successor agenda? There's all kind of fake populists.
There's certainly lots of fake populists. And I think that there's no question that, you know, all of the technologies of broadcast television and since then social media have really transformed our political system, so you don't have La Follette standing on the back of a wagon anymore. Although I have to say, I was at the protests in Seattle in 1999, and there was Danny Glover standing on the back of a wagon talking to a crowd in Seattle. So it's not a forgotten tradition at all. But I think that one of the things that's interesting in this electoral year, of course, is that basically we have two anointed candidates. You know, there's no question that Joe Biden and Donald Trump have enough electoral votes to secure the nominations of their parties in the convention. And yet we're still running this television ads and everything else. You would think that, you know, in 1924, they did the whole election campaign in 3.5 months or something. Here we're beginning to think about our elections lasting 3.5 years when the candidate declares, you know, back years before the actual election takes place. So that's a huge difference. The other thing is that third parties are really play a different role now, I think, because what's happened, you know, our political system has so much forced us into this two-party dichotomy, and it's so difficult for a third-party candidate to even get on the ballot. Each state has their own separate laws, and everybody is sort of scrambling to get their ballot line and maintain their ballot line. You know, it's very hard to get notice and recognition as a third party, so that's all very different. In addition to that, the stakes of this election are probably higher than they have ever been. I mean, I think that, you know, you hear that every year. In fact, I wrote a piece for the Isthmus a couple of weeks ago where I said, you know, that line, this election is the most important in history, has been used since the 1800s. But the difference is now you have a candidate multiply indicted and convicted in a couple of cases, candidate Donald Trump, who is very clear about what he intends to do. He talks about being a dictator on the first day. He has two separate projects on the internet, Project 2025 and Agenda 47, both of which you can go and look at. And you can see, he says, these are the things we're going to do. This is how we're going to do them. And this is heavily funded by right-wing think tanks. So it's a very, very different situation. At the same time, we have an incumbent Democrat who has actually done a bunch of really good stuff domestically, but isn't getting so much recognition for that, but whose foreign policy is 100% the opposite of what La Follette would have stood for. La Follette we didn't talk about this, but La Follette was very much against U.S. intervention in Latin America, in Mexico, and he talked about that in the campaign. And, of course, again, in against World War One, where he was actually burned in effigy and threatened with expulsion from the Senate for opposing entrance into World War One. But, you know, here we have the sitting president, Joe Biden, who's engaged in a very aggressive militaristic foreign policy, and people are protesting against that. Well, what can you do in this situation? Well, one of the things that people have done in a number of states where it's possible is this uncommitted or uninstructed vote. And that potentially is a very powerful tool, because what it does in the states where this works, and it's not, you know, each state is different, but in the states where this works, it gives you delegates at the convention who can have influence on the party, on the Democratic Party platform. Yep. And we saw that in 2016, where the Bernie Sanders delegates had a huge influence and made the Democratic Party platform in 2016 the most progressive in history, as Bernie Sanders himself declared in a press release in July of 2016. So I think that this tool of the uninstructed or uncommitted, depending on what the states call it, is a very valuable and positive tool that can be used to wield some influence.
Committee meeting at the convention.
Right. In a time when otherwise we're so constrained into a two-party dichotomy of, you know, just Trump or Biden, right? This gives at least some place for people to exert some influence in spite of the fact that all of the mechanisms of the system in the United States is currently trying to push you away from individuals having influence.
Right. You asked the question then, can pressure from the uncommitted be able to influence a Democratic Party, like you say, in 2016, just because they have some delegates that are there? April 2nd, 8.3% of the Democratic primary voters voted uninstructed.
Right. And in Minnesota, it was even more. And in Michigan, it was more. And so all of those groups of people will have some chance to voice their concerns at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in August.
Now, people are really drawn to, when we're talking about La Follette and sort of the Biden track record domestically and in foreign policy. Now, people will like the anti-imperialist rhetoric of candidates, but their domestic policy is, you know, white supremacist, requires the votes of white supremacists. So it's like, it's crazy. And I just wanted to say that because there are these pieces that do resonate with folks. People have real concerns about a particular issue, and then a part of the person's agenda will resonate with them. How would you describe the full values of a progressive agenda, not just the parts you like?
Well, I mean, I think that what La Follette showed is that you have to be consistent throughout your entire life. You have to represent the interests of the people who you're representing, you know, as a congressperson or as a senator or a representative, as a governor. Your responsibility is to the people of your state or your district or whatever. And La Follette was true to that. He would represent the interests of everyday working people against his own political interests, against, you know, the threats to expel him. In the 1922 Senate campaign, they said, you know, his advisors said, you know, don't talk about your opposition to World War One. You know, you managed to not get expelled from the Senate. You're running for reelection. Just don't mention that stuff. And La Follette, you know, proudly said, no, I'm going to talk about that. You know, you guys may not agree with me, you audience members. If you don't agree with me, you don't have to vote for me. But I think that militarism is a bad thing. I think that the United States should not have entered World War One. And of course, now, you know, 105 years later, we look back on World War One and we say he was absolutely right. World War One was a boss's war. It was a war about, dividing the empires, and it was a war about the growing military-industrial complex, which, you know, it was 50 years later that Eisenhower spoke about that, but La Follette was talking about it in 1917 in the pages of La Follette's weekly magazine.
No, we don't have time to talk about the specific rundown of the events that start tomorrow, but, you know, everything, when I was going through it and I was highlighting what I would want to go to, definitely tomorrow afternoon from 2 to 4 just seemed like an obvious choice. People, check out the schedule.
Yeah, you can go to our website, progressive.org. You can click on the little blue banner for the 100th anniversary of La Follette's candidacy, and you can see all the listing of all the events. We also have a fundraising dinner on Thursday night where Brian Standing from WRT is going to be doing a La Follette speech, and lots of other great stuff. Progressive.org for more information.
Hey, thank you. Thanks, Norman Stockwell, a publisher of the Progressive Magazine.